Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Morgan Godfrey. Morena, Morgan, how are you?
Kia ora. Good morning. I'm good.
Hey, thanks for speaking to us this morning. It's nice to have you back on the line. There's plenty.
Yeah, thank you. Always fun.
There's plenty of things happening in Aotearoa at the moment to talk about. We're going to chat a little bit about National Party and their regulations bonfire, as it's been called, and some of the things they've announced in their economic policy document. Also, spy agencies, which are calling for greater transparency on political donations and ihu mātou. So let's start with the National Party. In a discussion document released this week, the National Party outlined its economic policies coming into election year. So they've said that they're planning to scrap 100 regulations have voted into power. What does this actually mean? What's this going to look like, Morgan, if that was to happen?
Pretty ugly, I think. Some of the regulations that they're targeting are health and safety regulations, including the reforms that, or some of the reforms that the last national government made to health and safety following the Pike River disaster. So it's, you know, it's pretty worrying that any opposition would target changes so sensitive, and changes which I think changes that were very, very good, and unusually good for a National Party to bring in changes to health and safety that were so beneficial for workers' rights and for workers. So it's been a bit of a worry to see Simon Bridges going down that track, because it's the same track that Trump has done as well. You know, he made the promise in his election campaign to do exactly the same thing for every regulation that, or for every two regulations that come in, for every regulation that comes in, two will go.
So is this a kind of like a populist sort of blustering in a way? Are they sort of trying to virtue signal something here to a specific group, or do you think they're kind of earnest in these intentions?
Oh, I think you nailed it there with a virtue signal. Looking at the proposal as well to raise the age of superannuation from 65 to 67, that comes in decades' time. If National comes into power, they won't actually implement it for decades, which, of course, is, you know, a virtue signal. It's not something they'll do immediately. It's just something they want to get the credit for, but pushing it out as far as they possibly can. So I think the regulations bit, the superannuation, but it is a bit of a virtue signal. I don't think they are necessarily genuine, like saying you'll cut 100 regulations or however many it is. We'll name the regulations for a start. Otherwise, how can we possibly take you seriously?
I was just going to say, I'm quite interested with the superannuation change, because as you were saying, if this was to happen, they're saying 2037 onwards is sort of the time frame they'd be looking at. There's been quite a lot of criticism of it, that it's going to disproportionately affect certain demographics. We're looking at like Māori and Pacific Islanders who have a lower life expectancy, also generation that's known high debt, high student debt, and no home ownership. Do you think that those would be concerns if this was to go ahead?
I think so. If you look at the numbers, Māori make up just over 15% of the population as a whole, but just under 5% of those on super. So it would have a disproportionate effect on Māori, in the sense that a good deal of Māori would miss out. And I think that's an unacceptable consequence, because it has a racial impact. You can argue sort of black and blue about the sustainability of superannuation at 65, but when you start coming into this territory where it has racial impacts on Māori, Pacifica people, I think it's starting to get, I think that's a very strong argument that it should stay where it is, because, you know, you don't have to be a racist to support raising the age of eligibility to 67, certainly not. But when it has those racial impacts, you really have to start asking the question, is it systemic or institutional racism at play?
Absolutely.
I'm totally opposed to it for that reason, but for also others that, you know, if you're a builder or a manual worker, a factory worker of any kind, you know, 65 is too late for super even. You know, people's bodies are breaking down in their 50s when they're in these jobs, let alone 67. It's an awfully long time to wait.
Absolutely. Hey, shall we talk a little bit about spy agencies now? Because this just sort of was being coming out yesterday. So spy agencies in New Zealand are calling for greater transparency on political donations. So the head of the SIS, Rebecca Kitteridge, told MPs that they've seen relationship building and donation activity by state actors and their proxies that concerns us. What does this mean, and why are these agencies concerned, Morgan?
I think it's interesting. I think it's an acknowledgement that all political donations are a form of influence peddling, and foreign donations are a form of foreign influence peddling. And I think that's, without wanting to be too broad or generalising too much, that has been a concern across the English-speaking world in regard to the Chinese Communist Party for quite a few years now. I know in Australia they had a very similar controversies unfold where proxies of the Chinese Communist Party were donating to, and they use the word infiltrating, which is probably wrong. You can't really infiltrate anything in a democracy. But, you know, joining the Liberal National Party or joining the Labour Party, ostensibly, you know, as political activists, but according to the spy agencies, as spies. So something that I think has come a little bit late to New Zealand, an acknowledgement that there are sort of, or there may be a small handful of foreign actors who are attempting to steer or to influence or to at least get the inside word in one kind of or another in New Zealand. So it's really interesting that the spy agencies came out publicly to say so.
Absolutely. How do we sort of regulate this in New Zealand? Because obviously there seems to be a bit of a blurry line. I guess I'm thinking of last election in 2017 when the National Party got a $150,000 donation from a New Zealand registered company but owned by Chinese billionaire Lin Lang. So this was publicly declared and legal. But why are people concerned about that? How do we sort of, I guess, regulate those donations?
One of the answers is to make all political parties publicly funded, which I think is a nice idea, but it's a difficult one because it entrenches already existing parties. So it would entrench the National Party, Labour, Greens, New Zealand First and others. So it's a nice idea to prevent not just foreign, in quote marks, interest from influencing New Zealand, but from private interest of any kind influencing New Zealand politics. So it's nice in that sense, but is probably unworkable and in a sense a little bit anti-democratic. But otherwise, there aren't many good options. You know, New Zealand is quite proud of being one of the easiest countries in the world in which to do business. Very easy for foreigners, again, in quote marks, to set up companies or to set up trusts of one kind or another. And it's by and large a good thing for conducting legitimate business. And stop or regulating their ability to do so will probably have more negative effects than positive effects. And again, you start getting into kind of dangerous territory where you're targeting one group on the basis of, say, one or two individuals' behaviour, which is getting a little bit sketchy.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's speak about Ihu Mātou now, because that's what we spoke to you about predominantly last time we chatted to you. And a lot has happened since we last spoke. There was, of course, a hikoi last week from Ihu Mātou to the Prime Minister's office in Morningside to deliver a petition asking her to come and visit the whenua. Also, the Prime Minister went to the Tūranga Waewae Marae and met with Kingitanga as well. Do you think that there is a change in the way that the government, and actually particularly the Prime Minister, are approaching Ihu Mātou, or is it more of the same that we've seen before?
I think there's a slow opening. The Prime Minister has said that although she will not visit the land now, that she will at some unspecified point in the future, which is a little bit more than she has been saying in the previous week. So I do think that the government is becoming a little bit more receptive to playing a part. For example, the Ngāia Mahuta is helping facilitate talks between the Kingitanga, the tribal authority, and the land protectors. So I think that's a development. She's not involved in the negotiations herself, but is playing that outside role. So that's another little opening. And I think it was last week, suggestions came out, or Simon Bridges asked in Parliament whether there is a plan for the government to loan money to Waikato Tainui to buy the land back. The Prime Minister said no, there's not, but I don't think that suggestion has come out of nowhere.
Right.
I think there have been legitimate suggestions that is a possibility. So again, that would have been, if it were true, would have been an interesting development in the government's thinking. But although it is not what the government is going to do, or at least not at this point, I think it does signal that creative solutions are being thought of, mm-hmm. Both within the Crown and within those the land protectors and Waikato Tainui and Kingitanga groups.
Do you anticipate we'll see a resolution in this in the near future, or is this going to continue to be a longer conversation?
Oh, yeah, I hope so. You know, it would be nice if the Prime Minister turned up to the land tomorrow with her checkbook and said, we're going to buy it off the community and give it back, which, really, to be honest, is really the easiest option for everyone involved, I think, for the Crown, because Jacinda Ardern has to come down on someone's side at some point. There's only so long that she can sort of play all sides. For the land protectors, the only way they are going to move off the land is if the land is brought off Fletcher Building and then put into a reserve or into the country's common heritage in one form or another. And the only thing that will satisfy the iwi as well as if the land is brought to and the land protectors move. So if I were Jacinda Ardern, you know, I would just get it over and done with quickly, rather than dragging it out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Morgan. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. We'll hopefully speak to you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Cheers. Thank you for that.
Thanks so much.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.